Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we thank you again for joining us at Christian Worldview today. Having a little bit of production challenges here in the studio this morning as the Tyranny Response Unit once again is trying to produce the show and be the show host himself this morning. Not sure what happened to our production staff, but we will find out shortly, and hopefully they'll show up before long and help us through our morning. We have a lot of things going on today, one of which, for those of you who are just joining us now on the recorded broadcast, you'll find that you have a short recording today. In fact, one of those production glitches we're talking about is the recording just started a couple of minutes ago, so we're sorry that you missed the first couple email questions that came into the show today, but at any rate, we're doing our best to provide quality programming for those who need to learn how to think better, which we all do, especially those on the Christian right who are so frequently misled by the politicians, the wiles of the media, and so forth. It's really a sad thing. Yesterday, speaking of sad followings, President G.W. Bush, the professed Christian who has these faith-based initiatives, was in the news. He said, this is a day or two old now, this story. Thought it would be worth ringing up here. Didn't have a chance to the last couple days because we've been so enthralled with talking about government schools and so forth. President Bush, faith-based initiative. Washington President Bush on Tuesday dismissed criticism that his plan to steer public money to religious charities might discriminate against people who did not share their beliefs, saying those groups should have an all-drunks-are-welcome policy to let religious charities spend the taxpayers' money, and he's going to bypass Congress. He's using executive orders and regulations to give religious organizations equal footing with non-sectarian groups who are competing for federal contracts. Interesting note, and we're not going to comment a whole lot on that this morning, except that we are following that story. Also, for those of us who are interested in South America and some of the things that go on down there for various reasons, including what happens to the Christian church there. In places like Chile, there are many thousands of evangelical Christians. Other countries, not too many, like Uruguay, which is in the news today. Uruguay inaugurates its first leftist leader, Montevideo, Uruguay. A doctor took office as Uruguay's first socialist president Tuesday, joining the ranks of left-leaning leaders in Latin America, now six in all, governing a majority of the region's people with a cautious approach to U.S.-backed free market policies. Very questionable, by the way, if the U.S. really has free market policies. Nevertheless, in one of his first official acts, Tabaré Vázquez restored full diplomatic ties with communist Cuba more than 2 years after diplomatic row divided the countries. Thousands of Uruguayans, many waving flags and chanting Uruguay, filled Montevideo streets for the inauguration of Vázquez, a 65-year-old cancer specialist whose swearing-in ended more than 170 years of power by two moderate parties. Now, Uruguay, of course, is a small country, but this is a great concern any time we have socialists come into power. Here we have one. He says, "I'm praying this means we will eventually have a better Uruguay." He said, "One where there is better public health, better public education, and work opportunities for everyone." Uruguay, long one of Latin America's most stable economies, is climbing out of the 2002 depression in which the economy shrank by 11%. The upheaval left one of three Uruguayans below the poverty line, a blow to a country where generous social benefits had for years assured one of the region's highest living standards. Voters are increasingly skeptical of free market policies being touted by Washington as a remedy for the region's economic ills. And I don't think they were touting free market economics. Again, folks, this is a a problem with the media. They don't understand what free market economics are. And free market economics has nothing to do with government intervention into the economy, has nothing to do with utilizing a World Bank or giving handouts of foreign aid. Free market economics has to do with letting a country like Uruguay completely operate on its own with no benefits at all coming in as a matter of foreign aid, and taking away all the restrictions internally in that country, including the printing of fake money or paper money, including the terrible violations that occur through income taxes and other kinds of extortive taxations in that country, and eliminating regulations, licenses, and all other permissions to do to operate businesses, including things that are related to business, such as labor unions. We want to get rid of all their power. That is how you have a freer market. What the United States is proposing and going down there is not a free market, although it has some semblance of competitiveness to it. It's a big government program through the World Bank and other things, which give certain kinds of foreign aid and allow manipulation and meddling with the economy. At any rate, he continues in this article, over the last decade, many South American countries adopted free market reforms, opening their economies and privatizing state industries, only to see their economies slow to a grind. Unemployment rates shot into the double digits in the 1990s amid a widening gap between rich and poor. Interesting article. We'll be following, of course, what happens down in South America, because it's quite interesting to keep up with that. Also, we have the UN in the news in the last couple of days. Anon claims very firm measures amid continuing sex abuse scandal. The UN shuffles on rape cases. Amid continuing allegations of rape and sexual abuse by its own peacekeepers, the United Nations is about to issue a report focusing on the problem and making suggestions to end the abuse. No, the United Nations, a pure organization and free of political ties, would never engage in such things. Of course, they're denying that they themselves would condone it, of course, and they probably don't. But nevertheless, we still see UN workers behaving in this very heinous manner. We also have some people burning the UN flag. The new under article entitled "The New World Disorder: Americans Burn the UN Flag." Radio listeners torch blue banner to protest United Nations Day. This is actually last year that this happened on the 26th. A group of talk radio listeners in Montana burned a United Nations flag to protest a ceremony at the state capitol honoring the global body. Interesting to bring up the past a little bit as it comes more current as we see the United Nations doing its dastardly behavior. We also have a few other articles coming on into the show that relate to international issues. The World Trade Organization, for instance, which the United States joined in 1994, has been disastrous for American sovereignty. Make no mistake about it, WTO ministers tell Congress to change American laws, and Congress complies. In fact, congressional leaders obediently scramble to make sure the corporate tax bill passed before a WTO deadline. Thousands and thousands of bills languish in committees, yet a bill ordered by WTO has pushed to the front of the line. I plan to join with other House colleagues this year in demanding withdrawal from the WPTO. This is actually not an article. This is Representative Ron Paul, the Republican, actually libertarian, pro-life libertarian from Texas, and his column or blog, Texas Straight Talk. And we appreciate that comment, and we agree 100% with Ron Paul on this and probably nearly every other issue. An excellent, excellent choice of words. Now, why is all this international stuff of interest to us? Well, as Christians and as those who love liberty, we have to understand that other countries do not have the same foundation that America had. They do not hold to the same principles that we had. We'd like for them to adopt those same principles, but when we pull something like the United Nations as a blanket to cover the United States or America's policy, or America's way of life, we are dealing ourselves a death blow. We are harming ourselves by being involved with the United Nations, and we want complete pullout from the United Nations. We want nothing to do with it. Now, of course, the social leftists do not agree. They think the United Nations is a good deal. They like the idea of one world government or world rule or having a world court and having the world involved with our affairs here. Instead, what they don't realize is the truth that we are a beacon, or at least we were a beacon to the rest of the world, of what liberty can mean and do for a civilization and for people. And although all the other countries turn to go down the drain and go to their leftist socialist ways, we could stand firm and show the world that, no, indeed, prosperity, civilization, advancement, and human progress all occur under a capitalistic-based free market system where liberty reigns and where government is very limited. That should be the ideal. And they should be able to look through their own economies and find out that, indeed, the socialism or other kinds of totalitarianism, fascism, communism, whatever it is, whatever variety might emerge out of the socialist doctrine comes out, that those things are going to bring about war, misery, poverty, and dilapidation of resources. That's what you get when you have those things. That's the history of the world. The sociologists were wrong. Marx was wrong. Darwin was wrong. All these people were in large measure wrong. And their wrongness, when it translated into public policy, turned into disaster in terms of the loss of human life, incredible carnage in the 20th century, as well as the loss of property and the loss of individual liberties. The indoctrination that the left is trying to force upon us through the public school and through the media is astounding. And yet, why in the world would we want to give up the great heritage that we have in America, as well as the liberties that we have? Any thinking person who loves liberty would have to see that the United Nations, these globalist pacts that we have, for the most part, even including the WTO, need to be out of the picture. Also want to be aware of this thing, FTAA, this globalist policy, the free trade of the Americas Agreement. And now there's this small one, the smaller version of it that just includes certain Latin American countries. The socialists are trying to get involved here and have a wider NAFTA. It's not because American jobs are at risk. American jobs are always at risk when technological improvements come along the way. And so just because cheaper labor is available is not the major concern here, at least not for me. I know it is for some listeners and so forth. The main concern is this is a bill not about free trade. It's a bill about globalism, socialism, trying to bring world government to the region where we become under some super standard of law and order, so to speak, or super standard of governance at least in the whole region of the Americas, North and South. This is a dangerous thing. This is the most dangerous aspect of it. Again, the economics or the free market aspects of it, I think, would work themselves out over the long run in terms of jobs. But at any rate, beware, folks, of all of these kinds of programs. They are indeed very egregious, very dangerous, and we have to be very cautious of when we see them. We also have a couple other stories coming up related to this, and again, as Christians, think deeply about the issues. Think what God would have us to do in the certain circumstances which we're placed. We do not want to be those who simply cower in the face of the enemy who would come and assail us. We do not want to be those who imbibe the doctrines and understandings and themes of the enemy. Instead, we want to be those who stand fast for liberty, uphold those things which make the promotion of the gospel easier and allow us to educate our children, raise our families in the fear and admonition of the Lord, but also in all quietness and peace before the civil government, which is so frequently, almost all the time, tyrannical and evil and hateful and spiteful towards those who love the Lord and who try to seek to do truth and justice in the world. Well, we have several other things coming up, but we're going to try to, if we can here, although, again, it's difficult for the Tyranny Response Unit to do more than one thing at a time. We're going to try to go to our 8 o'clock break here on the Tyranny Response Network. Remember, you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. Visit Paul.
You're listening to TRN. Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you back into Christian Worldview this morning here on the Tyranny Response Network. So glad that you've been able to join us this morning. Remember, as always, our phone number, 864-201-6955. And although I'm flying solo here in the production studio this morning, we hope that we'll be able to get your calls on the air without too much delay or problem. We're talking about very important things this morning on Christian Worldview as they relate to the Christian life, the Christian view of public policy, and how we as Christians should view the state with respect to various themes that it's thrusting upon us. In recent shows, we've had an opportunity to talk about the public school, and especially this PPIC Act that we had a debate over on Monday at the Americans for Constitutional Government. Many people are now responding to Representative Lewis Vaughn, trying to get this fellow to incorporate the SCIFA provisions, the ones the South Carolina Educational Freedom Act that the Tyranny Response Unit suggested should be used instead or in place of the main objectives that are found in the PPIC Act. Some of you wanted to write to him and tell him about that. You can do so at hom@statehouse.net, hom@statehouse.net. You can also reach him by telephone at 864-848-0368. That's 864-848-0368. Make sure that you take some time to call Representative Lewis Vaughn and tell him to incorporate into this PPIC bill the provision that Dr. Coben handed him at the debate on Monday. At the very least, if he refuses to do that, tell him to take homeschoolers out of this bill so that we don't get molested by it as some government regulation starts to arise and tell us how to raise our kids or how to teach them or when to teach them or what to teach them as the camel's nose goes under the tent and soon comes into the tent. Before long, if this bill passes, we'll have our little carrot, that is a tax credit for some people who make less than $75,000 a year. But we'll also have all sorts of regulation, which is what the left really wants out of this bill. Beware of this bill, folks. It's a bad bill. We do not want to support the public school, which is what the main purposes of this bill are all about. One of the things we've been doing, I wanted to read a little bit from Short's book here in just a moment, but I received an email from Matthew talking about Utah, who is submitting two pieces of legislation. One is to protect homeschoolers. That would give us total freedom, he says, and that's the kind of thing we need to be looking for in the PPIC. He was a supporter of PPIC and principle until he found out what the thing is all about. And now he's against it, as he should be. Appreciate that, Matthew. And he's trying to find better alternatives to the PPIC. Apparently, if you go to the website www.sltrib.com/Utah, you'll find various bills. I guess there's a couple things in which Utah and some of the western states are doing to oppose. First of all, they're to oppose things like the FTAA, the Free Trade of Americas Agreement, and to get rid of the Federal Department of Education as well, including giving some protections along the way to homeschoolers. So we applaud Utah for that, even though it is a Mormon state, a false religion. Those who hold to that, we do not believe are saved or are doing the right things in terms of religious truth, but they certainly are doing the right things in terms of political truth, and we have to applaud them at least and give them credit where credit is due. So take a look at what's going on in Utah. It might give us a better understanding or better inkling about what we should be shooting for in South Carolina and elsewhere. It's not the PPIC Act. You need to go also, folks, to policyofliberty.net and scroll down the page a little ways under the Liberty Minute section. There are Liberty Minutes sort of recorded by the Tyranny Response Unit. That's me, Dr. John Coben, on various, basically based on various articles that I write or columns that I write on various topics. And these things include things like the lottery, the state versus the government, free market reforms that can be used to stop immigration problems, many issues. Well, a couple of the latest ones have to do with the lottery and then the PPIC Act. The PPIC recorded Liberty Minutes is actually a little bit long. It's about 12 minutes long. But if you go to policyofliberty.net and you scroll down until you find that PPIC article under the Liberty Minutes section, click on the link that says to listen here. It will pop up in your media player on your hard drive, the program in which I tell you exactly what the PPIC is all about and why you need to oppose it. So go ahead and do that. Also, then, you can download the file if you want. It's pretty large. I think it's like 4 megabytes. And email the file to people so they can listen. Or you can simply send them the link and tell them to scroll down and click on the link themselves and listen on their own computers. People need to know about this. The big money came into the state, swaying Mark Sanford last year. This is a project, this PPIC, that they're trying to spread throughout the country to try to regulate through the back door, I believe, homeschoolers and attack us who love liberty. They're trying to rally the Christian right around this as if it's a good thing. It's like they're trying to rally us around, supporting George W. Bush and the gullible Christians follow the Pied Piper. Don't do it, folks. You need to tell people about how bad PPIC is. Tell them to go to policyofliberty.net and listen to the Liberty Minute, which discusses PPIC, so they can understand what the problem is and why they can't possibly support this bill. And furthermore, to write to Louis Vaughn or any of the rest of the representatives they might have here in South Carolina and say, Mr. Vaughn, we appreciate your interest and concern in promoting private education, but PPIC is a bad bill. Incorporate what Dr. Coben says so that it's more favorable to homeschoolers, or leave us out. Take the word homeschooling out of the bill entirely so it has no effect on any regulation of what we're doing here as homeschoolers. Again, you can reach Louis Vaughn at 864-848-0368. That's 848-0368. You can also send him an email to hom@statehouse.net. Since I mentioned my columns here, I want to give a quick plug for the Times Examiner. My weekly column appears not only on the webpage, which you can get usually before it's published anywhere else, but also in several other publications around the country, including Free Market News down in Florida and some publications here and there in the Midwest. But locally here, you can pick up the Times Examiner, or you can have it sent to you by mail every week anywhere in the United States for $22 a year. $22 a year. It's a small price to pay to have weekly columnists mailed to your doorstep. These include people like Walter Williams, Thomas Sowell, Joseph Sobrin, Charlie Reese, Phyllis Schlafly, and then, of course, yours truly, John Coben, and Ben Graydon, who joined me in fighting against the PPIC on Monday. Many good columnists, well worth the pennies, literally pennies a week that it's going to cost to have this thing sent to you. You can call Bob Dill, the publisher, or Laverl at 864-268-0576, 864-268-0576. Or you can pick up a copy if you happen to be in Greenville at 44 Pine Knoll Drive in Greenville. That's 44 Pine Knoll Drive in Greenville. The subscription rate is only $20 if you live in South Carolina, $22 out of state, and we encourage you to pick up a copy and read the columns that are found therein, 864-268-0576. Well, relating to the public school issue, we've been talking a bit about this man, Bruce Short, who's done an outstanding job of exposing the public school. Bruce Short is a Southern Baptist. But he's obviously not your run-of-the-mill Southern Baptist, because not only because of the principles he stands for and his solid faith, but because his education for any Christian, not just a Southern Baptist, is very unusual. He's a graduate of Harvard Law School, a Ph.D. from Stanford University, and was a Fulbright scholar. Although I have to admit, I keep reading about him being a Fulbright scholar. I don't like the Fulbright scholarship because it is a government program, even though it's supposedly an honor. Would never even think about going after Fulbright money, any other government money for that matter. But at any rate, leaving that foible aside, he serves on the boards of directors of Houston Ebony Music Society and the Exodus Mandate. So he's related to our earlier email from Corey in one way or another. And what a great guy to have involved with something like the Exodus Mandate. This is a top quality person. This is someone who really knows his stuff. And this book, if you haven't got it, you need to get it. Published by Chalcedon Foundation, The Harsh Truth About Public Schools by Bruce N. Short. That's two T's in his name. And we're going to keep reading a little bit of this book, probably every day for a little bit while here on the show. Here's something from page 121. Would it shake your confidence in the academic performance of government schools if you knew that 68% of American fourth grade children cannot read proficiently and that 47% of urban fourth graders can't even read at a basic level? Would you be surprised if nearly 40% of students at a large state university with high school grade point averages above 3.0 had to be enrolled in college remedial English and math courses? Would you be surprised that a 2001 Roper poll of college seniors attending the 55 most prestigious colleges and universities in America found, for example, that 50% could not identify the Constitution as a source of the doctrine of the separation of powers? Only 22% knew that the phrase government of the people, by the people, and for the people comes from the Gettysburg Address, and only 34% knew that George Washington was the American commanding general at Yorktown. 37% thought it was Ulysses S. Grant. Not so very long ago, the average eighth grader knew these very basic facts of American history. On page 125, he says, remember, these levels of literacy were achieved in America, that is, high levels of literacy, where almost everyone could read very well and proficiently, from the poorest on up to the greatest in the early, in the 1600s and in the 1700s. In the section of the book, he's talking about how people came to America and reported with just awe how literate and how well-read, how well-versed with many things Americans were compared to other people around the world. This is the 1600s and 1700s, and I suppose even into the early 1800s. The complex, or remember these levels of literacy, he says, were achieved in an America that by today's standards would be considered utterly impoverished. It was a society that lacked electricity, central water systems, modern plumbing, modern heating and cooling systems, and all but the most rudimentary means of transportation and communication. Doctors then still did more harm than good, and infant mortality and fatal diseases were commonplace. Oh, and by the way, there was no ubiquitous system of government schools, nor were there any compulsory education laws, not even in Massachusetts. Children were typically taught at home, and often also received a few years of formal education in community schools, largely organized, paid for, and controlled by the students' parents. But that was a sporadic affair at best. George Washington, for example, had no more than 5 years of schooling, and perhaps as few as two. Benjamin Franklin left school after only 2 years at age 10. And he was quite brilliant, wasn't he? Abraham Lincoln had, in the aggregate, about 50 weeks of schooling in his entire lifetime. Frederick Douglass and many other, well, it was enough to do all the damage, perhaps. Maybe he just damaged himself elsewhere, like a sinful heart. I don't know. Anyway, Abraham Lincoln holds a special place in my heart, just like Stalin and Hitler and a lot of other evil men hold, by the way, just in case you're wondering. At any rate, Frederick Douglass and many other well-known figures had less or even none. Yet one of them would have thought it strange. No one of them would have thought it strange. It was simply the way education occurred in the days when America's Christian educational tradition was still dominant. It was also a time when no one confused obtaining an education with government schooling. While it is always possible to criticize America's original educational traditions from some utopian perspective, they were effective and adapted well to changing circumstances. Moreover, it is discussed in Chapter 6, the Common School, the Common School movement that over time replaced those traditions and that gave birth to our current system of government schools was the product of social and political motivations, not a response to educational failure. You see, since the Reformation, people began to read in Europe. It was the Christian heritage, people that said the Bible is for everyone, not just for the clergy, that caused there to be a push in society for people to learn how to read, to become literate. And that tradition was nowhere carried on better than in America. People in the United States of America and the colonies at that time did not want, and before then, actually, the colonies and what would become the United States of America did not want to carry on an illiteracy as a tradition, did not want to carry that illiterate people should be the common people in the United States. Instead, They wanted to make sure that everyone could read. They didn't do it with a government school. What they did it with was Christian churches with families taking to heart that this principle was important, and therefore they continued to push for higher rates of literacy, even among poor people. And people learned how to read, believe it or not, at a much higher rate and a much much deeper level than we currently have now. Well, interesting stuff about the public education system and what's been happening lately. We're going to try to go again to another quick break here, although we're, again, flying solo here, and we're sorry for the pauses. I'm sorry that you're probably listening on the recording or even live hearing some pauses this morning. Bear with us this morning on our volunteer staff tries to regroup, and we'll try to see if we can't get to a break and be back here at Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben in just a minute.
Security Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Disinfecting the Modern Mainstream Media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Integrity. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
We'll be right back.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back into Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben, your Tyranny Response Network, proud to be standing in the tradition of the Founding Fathers, opposing tyranny, promoting the things which we cherish as Christians and those who love liberty. We're so thankful again for the variety we have in our audience. We know that there are many very conservative or truly conservative or libertarian people in the audience who, some of whom are Christians. In fact, most of whom probably profess some faith, especially here in the Greenville area. But we also have a number of you who do not have any faith, have not professed faith in Christ in any way. And we would encourage you to do so because ultimately, knowledge about liberty, knowledge about free markets is not all that is necessary in life, because a person can believe all the right things about liberty, believe all the right, or be on the right side in terms of being on the side of the Founding Fathers, and still not have peace within and not have peace with God. And we would encourage you to look to the Savior, the only one, Jesus Christ, who can bring lasting peace into your life and give you eternal life. That's available to you anytime, just for the asking. It's a free gift of God. We'd be happy to talk with you more about that, and if you care to send us a comment by email to questions@policyofliberty.net, or there, of course, are many others who would be happy to deal with that. But in the meantime, this is a show not about preaching the gospel, although we're happy to do that here and there. It's a show about the Christian worldview, specifically as it relates to public policy. And we've had opportunity today to talk about the internationalists and globalists, as well as those who promote the public school and the PPIC bill. So we're glad to help you as Christians and as others who listen to the show learn to think better and more clearly about these issues. Where else do you hear on the radio, anywhere, the kinds of content that you hear here? Probably nowhere, because all of them seem to be one form or another, or one way or another, sold out for the same variety, the same party, whether it be the George Bush lovers or those who simply follow along the Pied Piper of the media without thinking about the issues deeply. Maybe because they aren't able to think deeply, I don't know, or is it just that they're lazy, I don't know. Or maybe they're just ignorant and have not been told the truth. I don't know. But here in the Tyranny Response Network, we can see through all that's going on around us, as much as possible, as God wills, much of that's going around us, and the harm that's being caused to our country on account of the liberal and neoconservative policies. By the way, be on the lookout for an upcoming article by the Tyranny Response Unit in a column probably in the middle of March on what exactly a neoconservative is. We throw that term out quite a bit. And in short, it's a liberal in conservative clothing. It's someone who admires Ronald Reagan and Franklin Roosevelt at the exact same time. A very hard thing to do. Well, at least from my perspective, it's a very hard thing to do, and perhaps from the perspective of other people as well. We have here a couple of interesting articles that came in. One is about the man's excusing of lawbreakers, Dr. Earl Tilford from Michigan News on March 1st. He said, effective wartime presidents are generalissimos, commanders-in-chiefs wielding military power to achieve historically monumental strategic ends, visionaries who shape and mold events through bold political and military action. Abraham Lincoln and Franklin D. Roosevelt, America's two greatest wartime presidents, served the nation's best interest. Ooh, did they really? Forfeiting contemporary public approval to the judgment of history. President George W. Bush also qualifies as one of the greats. One of my research staff must be having a great day here sending me stuff like this, just trying to get my blood to boil. He says, Abraham Lincoln led the nation through the greatest peril. Following Lincoln's election of 1860, Southern secessionists mistakenly believed they had a constitutional right to secede and that the federal government lacked the means or will to stop them. They did so without congressional authorization. Later on, he says in this article, Lincoln loosed William Tecumseh Sherman to make the war odious to the South with massive raids through Georgia and Alabama into the Carolinas. Lincoln is the nation's greatest wartime president. Roosevelt propounded the New Deal to provide government policies and bureaucracies appropriate for an industrial age economy. Yeah, my research staff, let me read the rest of this. Like Lincoln and Roosevelt, President Bush perseveres in the face of critics whose lesser visions and founder of strategic ambiguity and political uncertainty, great leaders respond to great challenges, confident that the verdict of history is what matters. History will rank George W. Bush among America's greatest wartime presidents. Well, this is from Dr. Earl H. Tilford, president of history at Grove City College, one of my favorite schools, and now if my kids go there, I'm going to tell them to never take a class from this guy, who is obviously a neoconservative who's obviously sold out to the left side and has no idea what he's talking about. Abraham Lincoln and Franklin Roosevelt were the two most abominable presidents we've ever had, and these are presidents that led us into the greatest slaughter that America has ever suffered and actually inflicted slaughter on this land. And more than that, even more tragic than that, they removed the mantle of liberty from this land. They took away the Jeffersonian ideal, the ideal of the founding fathers to have a place of liberty where virtue could be promoted and promulgated on the basis of the fact that men were free. They removed that and replaced it with a form of totalitarianism, strong centralized governance, and socialism. These guys were not good men. They fought wars like all socialists for in order to promote their own political power or the economic interests of their cronies and friends. And George W. Bush is in the line of Lincoln and FDR in this, and that's why we also oppose him, notwithstanding his fancy rhetoric about being a born-again Christian and attending church or that Episcopal thing he does. This is simply a farce, folks. These two presidents, my research staff, I'm sure, is just chuckling because they know they sent this over to me knowing that it would get my ire up. But since we were speaking of neoconservatives, I thought I would mention this particular article to you. We have what else have we on the agenda here this morning? Well, I have a very important piece that came in. It sort of relates to this from Dr. Stephen Yates. Dr. Stephen Yates, one of my favorite people here in the upstate of South Carolina, professor of philosophy just recently at the University of South Carolina Upstate in Spartanburg, and he is a libertarian, as am I, a pro-life libertarian, and one who loves the vision of the founding fathers, who opposes the materialistic worldview that spawns things such as Darwinism and Marxism, and also opposes something called political correctness. And he has an article he sent in. We're going to try to read a little bit of this and maybe finish it off tomorrow if we can't read the whole thing today. He says, political correctness, very real, very much a threat, despite public protest. What exactly is political correctness? Dr. Stephen Yates says, according to Christopher Story, writing in last summer's International Currency Review, a finance journal worldwide, it is a long research, carefully calibrated form of mass mind control. It gets results by means of fear exploiting a basic psychological phenomenon in society, namely the fear of social ridicule or of being different. It excludes independent thinking to which it is opposed. It has many manifestations ranging from requiring diversity prescriptions in all workplaces to creating pretexts for complaints about discrimination, which arise from the false assumption of equality into all dimensions of human activity and existence. Hans Hermann Hoppe, a tenured professor of economics at the University of Nevada at Las Vegas, has learned about political correctness. Last March, Hoppe delivered a 75-minute lecture on what economists call time preference, one's tendency either to spend in the present or save in the future. He made the commonplace observation that some people have higher time preference than others. High time preference people value instant gratification and are unable or unwilling to save for the future. A guiding factor, Hoppe argues, is children. People with children tend to plan for the future. Those without children tend to focus more on the present. Hoppe used homosexuals as one of his examples of a present-oriented group. Gays and lesbians are less likely to have children. They also have riskier lifestyles, another indication of present orientation, high time preference. A student filed an anonymous complaint saying Hoppy's comments had offended him. Hoppy was called onto the carpet by UNLV's administration. Formal hearings began. At first, university officials say they would issue Hoppy a letter of reprimand and dock him a week's pay. That option was rejected by Hoppy's dean at the university and the university provost, according to Hoppy. More hearings ensued. The university's final offer: Hoppy would receive a letter of reprimand and give up his next pay increase. Hoppy contacted the Nevada branch of the American Civil Liberties Union and is now their client. Not helping Hoppy in terms of university politics is that he espouses the philosophical and economic theories of the Austrian school, deriving from the writings of Ludwig von Mises and Murray and Rothbard, the latter once taught at UNLV. Most economists embrace the idea that the federal government can manage the economy alongside the Federal Reserve central banking system. The Austrian school rejects what Mises called the omnipotent state and defends a totally free market based on what Hoppe calls natural order. Hoppe, 55, is the author of numerous books, the best known of which is Democracy, the God That Failed, 2001. He is the only person in his department whose name is known outside UNLV. Doubtless he is resented by some of his colleagues. He has skillfully defended his views they consider outside the mainstream and gained an international audience. That this whole campaign is an orchestrated conspiracy is not impossible. By the way, being outside the mainstream isn't necessarily a bad thing. In fact, we should applaud certain people, at least I think so, because if you haven't guessed it already, folks, the Tyranny Response Network and the Tyranny Response Unit, that's me, Dr. John Coben, are outside the mainstream. In fact, we're seriously outside the mainstream. We are so far to the right outside the mainstream that you can't even see us if you're in the mainstream. Just a side note there. Let me continue on with Dr. Stephen Yates' article. The blogosphere came alive over the weekend on February 5th and 6th with bloggers demanding that the university drop its campaign against Hoppy, issuing him not a reprimand but an apology. Their suggestion to the anonymous student who complained, grow up. Many of Hoppy's defenders are associated with the Auburn, Alabama Ludwig von Mises Institute, where Hoppy holds a senior fellowship and frequently lectures. No longer is it possible for administrators at a university to crucify a professor without facing this kind of reprisal. A professor, the bloggers argue, is not responsible for the feelings created in a student by an economic theory. He is only responsible for presenting what he believes is the truth to the best of his ability. It will be interesting to see how this plays out. UNLV President Carol Ann Harder received so many negative emails that by the start of last week she had taken her email address down. Oh, that's a good thing. Dozens of scholars have sent her letters protesting Hoppy's treatment. UNLV's reputation has probably suffered more over this than Hoppy's. But the battle over political correctness is far from over. Christopher Storer's account, quoted above, includes observations that should give us all a few sleepless nights. According to Story, this whole thing can be tied to the alliances built up between Soviet and American elites in the 1980s, just before the so-called Cold War ended. He cites Abel Aganbegyan, who was Mikhail Gorbachev's chief economic advisor in the early years of Perestroika. Aganbegyan penned a book called Inside Perestroika, The Future of Soviet Economy, first published in the 1980s. Although it isn't obvious from the title, Aganbegyan had a strategy for how to impose collectivism on the American workplace. Big business elites listened. One of the Aganbegyan main prescriptions was that we now call what we now call political correctness, which soon had little difficulty to invading the workplace. This is why you cannot walk down the corridors or into the break room of any business today without seeing posted warnings about sexual harassment. Such warnings are now cultural universals. They have nothing to do with any specific complaint or pattern of complaints. They're in your face anyway, a constant threat that someone might take an idle comment or even a joke the wrong way. That's mind control, and it's everywhere. Its roots are Marxist. So no, Virginia, the fight is not over, not by a long shot. Despite all the exposés and all the protests from bloggers, Cases like the one at UNLV keep happening. They happen because the elites of our time in both higher education and big business want them to happen. We had better realize that the strong ties exist between political correctness and the controlling mindset of good old-fashioned Soviet-style communism, and that the latter has not died but only gone underground and assumed new forms. And we had better seriously explore the possibility that what communists want and what business elites want, however strange it sounds, is not that different. Both want power. One of my recent correspondents, independent scholar Terry Hayfield, a former trade leader in Ohio, is the author of a number of articles on the web on what he calls the permanent revolution, puts it this way: if communism is dead, no one will notice if it is being instituted in America. Excellent article. I wasn't even thinking I would read the whole thing, but I got going with this article by Dr. Stephen Yates, and it's just fabulous. You know, the political correctness movement, folks, is indeed tied in with the Marxian strategy. And how interesting it is to note that the elites of the Soviet Union and of the United States met in order to develop political correctness as a means to subtly and fraudulently overtake the American educational establishment and media, and to push the Marxist ideas or the ideals of Marxism through the political correctness movement. Sad and tragic as it may be, Dr. Yates, you've done a great service by pointing this out to us, and Lord willing, we'll have an opportunity to do much more service for the church and for those who love liberty through the publication of your articles. We have a couple of other things that are worth probably bringing up this morning, I would think. One is the antiwar.com site. If you haven't been to antiwar.com, do visit it. Remember, as Christians, we're not in favor of war. We're not against, most of us who hold the various different views of Christians and the state, namely the liberty of conscience view, the Christian Reconstruction view, or even the divine right view, are not opposed to self-defense. And therefore, we're not opposed to war in an absolute sense. But in an ideal sense, why would we as Christians want to be in favor of war? We want to be those who spread peace, who are peacemakers in the world, not those who cause fights and wars, and who promote these kinds of things. So none of us should be warmongers, and those who love liberty in general are not warmongers. We're just ready to defend ourselves when the left, those who want to subvert us or subvert our rights or undermine our liberties, are going to assail us and prey on us. We're opposed to predators, and we're willing to attack back when they want to attack us. That's where the story ends. We're not those who just sit around and wring our hands and think, when can I get myself into the next war so I can get a little more power or have a little more imperialistic expansion? We're not that kind of people, folks. This is a wrong way to be, and it's certainly not part of the Christian worldview. So antiwar.com, I have to admit, I like very much. And here we have a story, a February 28th story, says, or that's entitled, "Politically Incorrect History Has Neocons Steamed. The Anti-War Message of Trailblazing History Textbook Has Them Up in Arms." Now, this is a very long article. It's not a story. It's actually an article about 7 pages printed, single space. We won't have time to read it all in here, obviously. I'll try to pick out just a couple tidbits here, since it does relate to the political correctness movement. He says Thomas E. Woods, and this, by the way, is by Justin Raimondo. Thomas E. Woods, Jr.'s Politically Incorrect Guide to American History, recently put out by Regnery, the venerable conservative publisher, has caused a storm of controversy, the outlines of which define the parameters of the politically permissible. In today's constricted political debate, especially when it comes to foreign policy, only two flavors are allowed: right-wing neocon and left-wing neocon. A right-wing writer who opposes foreign interventionism condemns World War I as a senseless slaughter it indubitably was, and shows how FDR and the Brits dragged us into a second world war, is bound to come under attack from the battalions of the neoconized right, as well as the left. And the frenzied response to the Woods volume has not disappointed. I won't spend much time on Adam Cohen's editorial comment in the New York Times, except to say that his pairing of the Woods book with the Michelle Malkin's horrific In Defense of the defense of internment is a drive-by smear that stupidly puts Woods in the same camp with a policy, the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II, that I know Woods abhors and which he implicitly condemns in his book. There is a curious nitpicking quality to the Times piece in which the author drags all sorts of tangential items, for example, the Bushian invocation of FDR in support of his Social Security reform plan that have nothing to do whatsoever with the Woods book and his actual views. Cohen clearly doesn't know what to make of what we call Woods revisionism, the old right view of American history, that is the view held by conservatives in this country from the late 1930s until around the mid-1960s, has been shut out of the national dialogue for so long that it's enough to befuddle and even disorient the editorial writer for the New York Times, who only knows about prefix conservatism of the sort offered up in the pages of Commentary and the Weekly Standard. Those are neocon publications, a la Irving Kristol or Bill Kristol and others. Speaking of the latter, the boys over at Bill Kristol's flagship journal, The Big Government, Conservatism, and the Empire, are certainly all too familiar with the old right, their ancient enemy, and are less shocked than positively outraged that Woods and all he represents have dared to make the New York Times bestseller list, and that's where Max Boot saw mention of the politically correct guide, incorrect guide, noting the Times described this book as a neocon retelling of American history. Say what? If the neocons were going to issue their own retelling of American history, then they surely would boot. Then surely Boot would know about it. To the clueless New York Times, which wouldn't know a neocon from a paleocon from a red-breasted booby bird, all conservatives look alike. But Boot knows better. He decides to check it out, and it doesn't make him happy. And the book, the article, simply goes on to talk about the disaster that has befallen us because the media has so much promoted the neocon as the mainstream of conservatism now, and therefore has undermined really the traditional values that the traditional conservatives in the Burkean tradition, John C. Calhoun tradition, have held. That's why, folks, there is a Constitution Party. If you want to be a conservative, you don't belong in the Republican Party. You don't belong among the rank and file of the Bushians, the modern-day neocons, or the Irving Kristols. You need to be out and doing what's right and supporting the truth instead of getting involved with these kind of lunatic organizations and movements. I guess you can't really call it a movement, more a persuasion of being a neocon. Remember, the neocons line up under people such as Ronald Reagan, but also under people such as FDR, Teddy Roosevelt, Alexander Hamilton, Henry Clay from the 19th century. These are the great liberals who infiltrated the conservatives and gave it sort of a different view, such as using government to help business, to promote science projects, to promote NASA, to create an environment where business might operate more effectively as if the market fails. They are the market failure conservatives, those who believe the state has to step in and help people do certain things. But we're going to come and try to take one more quick break before the show ends this morning, folks. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network, and this is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We'll be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
The law of non-contradiction. The same thing cannot at the same time both belong and not belong to the same object and in the same respect. Aristotle.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we are trying to do precisely that this morning at the Tyranny Response Network. Greenville, if you're just about ready to get ready to go on your way to work this morning, it's a little bit cool outside. It's still in the low 30s. It's going to rise up to about 52 degrees today and be clear. But you'll obviously want to carry your coat with you or a good sweater during the day today. We're thankful again for those of you who have tuned in on the internet through the webcast. We encourage you to continue to do so and spread the word about the fact that we have a webcast. Yes, you can go to policyofliberty.net and scroll down the page a little bit to where you find a link that says live. And if you click on that live link, you'll be able to hear the Tyranny Response Network in your home or office on the computer. It'll pop up your Windows Media Player, whatever you use to play sound files, and you'll be able to get the show that way. We encourage you to do so and tell others about the Tyranny Response Network across the nation so they can listen in as well to the very good content we believe we have here in promoting the truth, unlike so many other stations and networks out there. A couple other things that were sent into my attention this morning. One I just want to quickly mention, and that is the bill. This came from newswithviews.com. This was actually a few days ago. A bill in Montana state legislature to keep feds in line. A new bill is introduced in the Montana state legislature which require the county sheriff to be notified before any federal agents are allowed to enter the state with the intention of carrying out law enforcement actions. The bill provides not only for pre-notification, but the sheriff must also give consent before federal agents may proceed. Similar action took place back on April 15, 1987, Bighorn County, Wyoming, when Sheriff Dave Mattis issued a new policy regarding federal law enforcement personnel. Federal law enforcement personnel need to notify Bighorn County Sheriff's Office in advance of any federal law enforcement operation in Bighorn County, Wyoming. Interesting story to follow. We want to see what happens with this because, of course, it is a 10th Amendment issue. They're basically saying in the state of Montana, look, federal government, we have our rights here as a state. And yeah, and if you want to come over here and do your darndest, you're going to have to let us know first. Interesting to see how that'll unfold. Certainly, the big guys, the Hamiltonians, the George Bushes, or the Gonzaleses, the Gonzaleses, who he's just appointed to be his attorney general, are not going to like this sort of thing. It'll be interesting to see how it all unfolds. Well, I can't overlook talking about this other issue: the Supreme Court taking on the Ten Commandments. We have reported in Fox News by Jane Rowe, New York, more than a year after an Alabama justice lost his job over a Ten Commandments display, the U.S. Supreme Court on Wednesday revisited the politically thorny issue for the first time in more than two decades. The court, which in 1980 ruled that all religious displays do not belong in public schools, will now decide if displays on government property also violate the First Amendment. Specifically, the justices will consider a Ten Commandments monument in Texas, and framed copies of the commandments in two Kentucky courthouses. The two cases, Van Orden v. Perry and McCreary County v. ACLU, went in opposite directions in lower courts, as have most challenges involving religious displays in public settings. In the McCreary County case, U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit affirmed the lower court's finding that the display in two Kentucky courthouses and a school district copies of the Ten Commandments violated the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, which prohibits the government from anointing an official religion or showing preference for one faith over another. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, however, found no such violation of the Monument of the Commandments on the grounds of the state capitol in Austin, Texas. And then it talks about the other cases as well here. But what's interesting for us in the Christian worldview is obviously this has a lot to do with the Christian faith. I mean, the Ten Commandments are contained in Deuteronomy 6, Exodus 20, are quoted nine of the commandments are quoted directly by Christ in Mark chapter 10 and elsewhere. Paul quotes the commandments. So they obviously have to do with the Christian faith. So the question is, do we want to have the Ten Commandments, and do we want to fight for the posting of the Ten Commandments in public places? Now, here is an issue which is rather thorny for those on the political right, whether to be conservative or libertarian. And again, it's going to come down to the particular position about public policy, your worldview about public policy as an evangelical. Which worldview do you have? Which of the four views do you espouse? Well, the four views, once again, are the pacifist view or the Amish Anabaptist view. Then there is the liberty of conscience view, which is my view as the tyranny response unit. There is the Christian Reconstructionist view, which is held by great men like Gary North and R.J. Rush Jr. And then there is the what I call the revitalized or reshaped divine right of kings view. Which is held by many, probably most Christians today. In fact, I remember caller Juliet yesterday espoused quite clearly that divine right position. Well, you can find out which particular view that you espouse simply by going to policyofliberty.net and scrolling all the way down the front page until you get to a link that says at the very bottom, take the quiz. And there you'll find, that pops up when you click that link, a 15-question self-guided quiz that will help you understand where you line up with one of these four historical views. It's a self-guided 15-question quiz. The first five questions help you understand which school of public policy from a Christian point of view you belong to, whether it be the competing kingdom school or the integrated authority school. And then further, the next 10 questions help you further define whether you're in which one of the four views or the two subviews of each of those schools you belong to. And you think, well, is that really worth doing? It is. It's a helpful exercise. Please go there and take the quiz and email us your results. Most people who have listened to the show and have taken the quiz have emailed us results and have found themselves to be, in large measure, either aligned with me, the Tyranny Response Unit, in the Liberty of Conscience School. I think most listeners who have sent it have been in that school. Or they've been Christian Reconstructionists. I would probably say off the top of my head that 60% would be Liberty of Conscience folks so far, and 39% would be in the Christian Reconstruction camp, and 1% have been in the Divine Right camp. I've had no pacifists yet as yet take the quiz or call in and tell us that they have. Write in and tell us that they have. But it's a helpful, useful, heuristic tool for you to help you think better as a Christian. Well, the Ten Commandments issue is going to sway or going to be perceived differently by different Christians according to their view of public policy. The competing kingdom school looks at the state, and that it would be liberty of conscience or the pacifists, the state as something that's not part of the kingdom of God. The liberty of conscience people will go even further to say that it is aligned with the kingdom of Satan, that it is very satanic in its essence and therefore is non-transformable as under the dominion mandate, and we cannot expect the state to ever uphold the law of God in the land. The state upholds what it thinks is right and punishes people according to who do what it thinks are wrong, which are diametrically opposed to the law of God. Now, the other school, the Christian Integrated Authority School, which has both Christian Reconstructionist view and the Divine Right view, would say that's not true, that the state is sort of like a blank slate, benign or benevolent, maybe by nature, but can actually be used for the kingdom of God. And in fact, the Westminster Confession flat out says it's one of the three institutions that God ordained in the world to uphold his law. And so it's the punishment of evildoers would be those who do evil according to God's law, and therefore they should be punished by the state because that is the instrument God has given in the world to bring justice in a world of sinners. So they would view the state as being not only transformable but integral to the promotion of the kingdom of God. So depending where you fall on your Christian worldview, you're going to have a different view, I hope you see, about the Ten Commandments being posted. if you're in the integrated authority school, it's an abomination to remove the Ten Commandments. Because the Ten from viewing in public places, especially courthouses, because that should be the basic guideline for all justice that's issued by courts. If you're coming from a liberty of conscience point of view, although you'd like to see that as the basis for justice, you don't expect it to be the case whatsoever. In fact, states have not only not doled out justice, they've been the greatest progenitors of evil. Now, Theonomists will quickly come back and say, well, wait a minute, Dr. Coben, we're talking about an ideal state here. Yeah, the other states have been bad, but we still need to strive for the ideal. Well, the ideal, it depends on what one thinks about the state and its role in God's economy. If one believes it has a place in actually promoting the kingdom of God in the world, for punishing God who God thinks are evil terrestrially, and rewarding those who God thinks are good terrestrially, then yes, you're going to come up with that opinion. But for those of us who do not look at the state as transformable, do not expect anything good to come out of the state, we have a hard time being too concerned about the state displaying the Ten Commandments. And it's for this reason. It's not so much that we wouldn't like to have the state enforcing the Ten Commandments and to some extent, but because we know that if the state is given leeway to legislate morality, it's likely not to legislate the morality that Christians would appreciate or enjoy. And haven't we been talking this morning about political correctness, the abominations that go on in the public school, about euthanasia? These are the kinds of things that will not go our way as Christians. As a matter of fact, those who are in charge of running the state and public policy and those who are in the federal courts and even in the state courts are not going to be friendly necessarily to the church. In fact, it's probably a rare occasion where the state produces somebody who's friendly towards the kingdom of God and towards the church. And therefore, the view is, look, let's be careful. The Ten Commandments are not that big an issue because they're not going to support them at the state level. We don't believe the nature of the state will be comfortable with such a thing. But if we're talking about the Ten Commandments being there, what we'll be looking at next week is some laws from Buddha or Islam or the secular humanists or from Bertrand Russell's book, Why I'm Not a Christian, or whatever else. They're going to use that power to subvert the things which we cherish and value, namely the parts of our Christian faith, as well as the aspects of life that we do not appreciate too much, as they undermine liberty and promote things like socialism and, you know, Marxism, Darwinism, and all these leftist schemes that go along. So Christians, as I hope you can see, I've tried to be objective here in presenting both sides, and I do prefer the latter side. I do think the state is by nature intrinsically evil and a non-transformable institution that has nothing to do with the promotion of the kingdom of God or God's ways in the world, other than that the same way that Satan would have a means of promoting God's kingdom and his ways in this world. God uses governments. God uses Satan. He directs all these things under his providence. I believe all of that. I just don't trust the state to do anything that's absolutely or that's good, even in general. Other Christians are going to disagree with me. They're going to say, no, Dr. Coben, we appreciate your view. We appreciate your objectivity. We just think you're mistaken. And what we really believe is that the state needs to be brought in line with all the other principles and fundamentals of the gospel and of the truth of God's word. And we need to transform that state into an institution which promotes the kingdom of God and godly government in the world. Well, that debate continues. We'll be happy to talk about that more with you on Christian Worldview. This is a show not for the lighthearted all the time. It's a view where we deeply consider the issues of the Christian faith. And even good brethren, good people can disagree on this particular point, and even fight in the American Revolution together or stand firm against the tyrannies and oppressions of the state. But both of these views, just like the Presbyterian and Baptist views of baptism, exist in the Christian church. And it's not necessarily a reason to divide fellowship, but it is one to be appreciated, a distinction that can be made and can be appreciated between those who love liberty and those who value the great heritage that we have as Christians. So, having said all that this morning, we're now coming to the close of Christian Worldview. Amazing that we were able to do as much as we could without a producer this morning. I appreciate you hanging in there with me throughout the moments of silence that we've had and being off the air in the dead airspace. Trying to do our best. You're flying solo here this morning on the Tyranny Response Network. You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll see you again Friday morning, tomorrow morning, right here on TRN, and look forward to some excellent discussion once again. Until then, God bless you and have a great day.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning. Saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans that need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.